All right. Good morning. I'll call over the regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, December 8, 2015, and ask if everyone please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Well, thank you. Good morning. First item of business is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address items on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so? Seeing no one moving the microphone, consideration of minutes, and these are both for December 1st meeting and the December 1st city election canvas and draw lots.
Move approval.
Second.
Have a motion to second. Two.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consideration of personnel actions as listed, board.
Move approval.
Second. Shelley, was there something we're supposed to have? Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Just going too fast for. Aye.
Two.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. That's a good problem to have. Consent agenda. Please add road closure 1644.
Move approval with noted addition.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Two.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items today. Additional items of discussion and consideration of a quotation between Kel-Tec and Story County for non-budgeted purchase and maintenance of the Panasonic Arbiter System. Sheriff Fitzgerald and Nick Lenning.
We didn't scare Rick off, did we?
No.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
Good morning, board. Thank you very much for the opportunity to bring an issue in front of the board that I would like to address as soon as possible as the Story County Sheriff. You're all aware of the civil unrest and riots that happened in Ferguson, Missouri some time ago. And about 2 years before the Ferguson incident occurred, we began using body cameras in sync with our in-car cameras. And we started out with one brand, and they didn't seem to be holding up strongly. We migrated to another brand, and that brand worked well for us for some time. And then, as we started to having a desire to sync the body cameras with the in-car cameras, so they'd be automatically turned on at certain times to help capture what the deputies are doing, as the upgrade started coming on the second version of product we had, we started having all kinds of problems. The cameras were always down, devoted tremendous amount of staff time, not only of my personnel, but also of personnel from the information technology department that has been working on this. And to this day, we still have issues that have to be resolved. I have asked Sergeant Lenny to take our contract with this company down to the county attorney to look at for review, and they're reviewing that. And we went out and looked at other vendors out there to see what would be a appropriate product that would meet our needs and that we could do that. You know, whenever you have a camera down, which we, you know, quite often have them, that's when something's going to happen. And the public, I think, would have a lot less tolerance for today for us being involved in something that just happened to be a camera that...
Well, you think they're really going to believe into where we are today? You think they're really going to believe that we have a camera down, or do you think they're going to believe we're trying to cover something up?
Well, it's going to be very skeptical, and depending upon how serious the situation is. So anyway, I had ordered my staff to look at what options we had out there. And we had an option that I like that we had pulled together, and this brings in approximately $228,000 for outfitting all the patrol support services, the two deputies in support services, and the three jail vehicles with cameras and the body cameras. And the total amount for this is $228,000. the things that I like about this is right now we have two systems. And so one of the issues that we see discussed and concerns brought across the nation is, where do you store all this data that you record? Well, our policy and procedures in the Sheriff's Office, we keep our data that we capture for 2 years, and then it's erased, unless it's an incident is involved that's under review, or that we need it for type of investigation that we're doing. Those we hold on to indefinitely. The other issue is, with the multiple systems, we have to have multiple databases to capture that that information. By moving to one vendor, who we're recommending, of Panasonic, they have that would give us the opportunity to have the one data bank. It would be used across the sheriff's office, and not only the sheriff's office personnel working with that, but IT as well, who assist us greatly in this endeavor, would be of a position where it would also ease their time as well. That, I'm going to turn this over to Sergeant Lenny, because I think you'll be impressed by the information we found from other departments, the downtime on these cameras, especially compared to the downtime we've had with ours, and some of the processes that Sergeant Lenny went through to tabulate this information.
Sure.
Sergeant Lenny?
This one works. Okay, thanks for the opportunity to speak this morning. I'll speak to the new system, but I want to speak a little bit about the current system that we're using. The current system we use is a company called Digital Ally. We have about three different models with that company of cameras. Throughout the years, they've upgraded and had updated models. We have a model that's called the 500 system. We have a model called the 500 Plus system. And then we have six of the newest models called the 800 DVM 800 units. And on these DVM 800 units, they're designed with a body camera to be integrated with the in-car camera and the audio mic that we carry. So there's three devices that are recording. You have an audio mic on your belt, similar to this here. You'd have a body camera on your shirt, and then you'd have your in-car camera. And regardless of which item you pushed record on, this item is supposed to trigger record on all of the units and sync up and work seamlessly. That has never been the case since we've had these. We've had these units for about a year, have had tremendous problems with them software-wise, equipment, hardware-wise. I've had the sales rep up here. I've been on the phone several times with Kel-Tec. Just real quickly, Scott Fay and myself each have spent 60 to 65 hours on this system in troubleshooting over the last 6 months. You equate that out with the salary, that's approximately $6,000 a year in salary total that we're paying just to troubleshoot the six systems that we have, the six newest ones. The company that we're dealing with now, Digital Ally, has proven to have poor customer service. Like I said, it's been several months with these problems and no resolution with them. And I could go on quite a while about the problems that we've had with them, but I think it's pretty clear that it's a failing system. So we have six units now that are non-working, inconsistent, just not working consistently. And then all of our old units with Digital Ally are meeting their life expectancy. We currently have three of those units that are broken, that are not working. So we have three cars in our fleet that just do not have that record capability. And they're all meeting their life expectancy, so I'm projecting in the next year we're going to have anywhere from 3 to 5 more of those go down. We looked at a company called Panasonic. Panasonic's a fairly wide-known company. They've been making computers for a long time. Kel-Tec is a dealer of this Panasonic system. They also have the state bid price on the Panasonic system. We had them come up and show us the product and also give us some quotes on the services, the cost to install it, just some all-around quotes on the product. The nice thing about the Panasonic arbitrator system is that it has a 0.01% failure rate over a period of 10 years. That's just extraordinary, and if you look at any other product on the market, it doesn't even come close to that. If you compare it to Digital Ally, their failure rate is almost, I would put it up to 80% within the first year. Huge contrast there. Along with the Panasonic system, we have the ability to, it will upload videos automatically as you pull into the sheriff's office parking lot or you're back in the Sallyport. Any video that's recorded on the officer's car or body cam will automatically upload. Currently, we have to physically pull a card out of the camera, take it in, and upload those videos. Each officer needs to do that probably at least on a weekly basis.
So am I understanding you, this is by proximity, just by driving into within this range area?
Yes, sir.
It automatically syncs.
That is correct. Yep, automatically syncs. It throws those videos up onto the server. Same thing with your body camera. Currently, we have to take a card and plug it into the computer. That's taking about 20 minutes every time we do that. And then you also have to take your body camera off your vest, plug it into the computer, and manually upload those videos as well. Everything will be uploaded automatically. Same thing with updates. Currently, for updates, we have to touch every single in-car camera system to update that camera system. It's very timely, cost money to do. With this new system, it pushes those updates out. When there's an update, it just wirelessly pushes it out. It updates everything.
Let me interrupt just a minute again.
Sure.
Even though this is probably a technical issue, what happens in terms of your facility if there's a power outage and where your generator has to kick in or anything? What I'm trying to think about, what are the other things that could go wrong, which would be a temporary delay in our ability to have access to this information?
That's a great question. One of the things that could go wrong is something with the wireless access point, which is the piece of equipment that's going to allow us to wirelessly upload those videos. We have been quoted for a dock, an offloading dock, in the event that happens. They say it's rare, but we can physically pull out that hard drive out of the car. It's an easy process. It's right behind the second row seat. You pull that out if you need to upload videos, take it in, and you'd manually do it for that period of time until you get it fixed. The service agreement that we have been quoted for also covers any problems with the software, the equipment, server on the back end. It includes all of that. So the man hours that IT and myself have put into this equipment we currently have will pretty much be eliminated, and we can focus on our primary duties and responsibilities. I would characterize it as a hands-off system. It's proven. It has a proven track record. Our maintenance agreements will cover the cost through Kel-Tec. It's a one-stop shop. If we had a problem, we call Kel-Tec. They do the troubleshooting. They take care of all the issues. On the equipment itself, I have done reference checks to four different agencies. I've listed a page in there for you with a brief explanation of it. There's a combined total of 535 cars combined with these four agencies that have the Panasonic arbitrator system. They all gave rave comments and reviews about the system. A few of them said they've had a few problems, but they attributed that one to user error, and the other one was to the installer that installed their equipment, did something wrong, and they got that corrected, and it's been fine. A lot of these agencies have had the equipment. They're going on 7 years with it, and it's still working great. Haven't had any issues with it. So out of 500-some cars, I mean, I think it speaks for itself. One thing about Panasonic is they're usually late to come to the game on products, but when they do come to the game with their new products, it works. I think they take that extra time to examine how things are working out in the field. They do their own field testing, and when they put it out there, it's a good, solid product. They're also a core manufacturer of their products, so they're not shipping it overseas. They're making their own products. It's built tough. It's built good, and you can rely on it. So. Trying to think if there's anything else that pops out top of my head.
Nick, let me step in here and first of all say thank you to you. I think it's a phenomenal piece of research that you did here. I appreciate the information that you gave us, not only verbally just now, but in the packet, and the references were really, really helpful. And so I'll just tell you where I stand and see if anybody disagrees with me. In my mind, In today's age, we've got to have the body cameras and the car cameras. We have to. It's not a choice. It's not one of those things that, maybe we can save a few dollars by not having that. The only thing worse in my mind than not having them would be having them but not being able to rely on them. I think that's worse than not having them because then, like I say, Sheriff, I think that the second something doesn't work like we want it to work, it's not that it was just a mistake or some kind of technology glitch. It's that somebody's trying to do something shady, and none of us want to be in that position. So that's the first step. I think we've got to have them, and I think if we're going to have them, they better be reliable. I think there's no question when you compare these two companies that Panasonic has the equipment that we can rely on, that is worth having. And so for me, Nick, mainly because of the work you put in and the information you gave us here, in my mind it's a no-brainer that we need to move to this. We need to move to this for all 26 vehicles. We need to do it as soon as possible. And where the conversation comes in for me is how exactly are we going to pay for that? We've got two options that I can see here for paying for that either. And I've got, Sheriff, my number's different than you, so I don't know if there's a mistake on my page, but $232,000 is what I have here.
Sure, I can explain that.
And Sheriff said $228,000. I mean, it's really close where we are. The second option is a five-year lease option, which would cost us $50,000 a year, and I assume that's in addition to the annual maintenance contract, which is $16,000 a year. So we'd be $67,000 a year, if I'm doing my math right, for those two, $50,000 and some change and $16,000 and some change. To me, unless you guys feel differently, it's a no-brainer to go with the Panasonic, to do it as soon as we possibly can. And where the conversation for me comes down is it option three, which is buy them outright, and let's figure it out at $230,000 roughly, plus the $16,500 a year, or is it the lease, which is costing us just over $4,000 a year, I think, in interest? The attractive part to that for me is then I feel like there's more, they've got more riding on it then. They have collected all their money from us up front.
Right.
Hopefully, then if we have issues, I read somewhere that there's a 3-4% chance that the installation based on their past that we're going to have problems. So that tells me that on average, one of the vehicles we ask them to do, we're going to end up having problems with. I like the idea of keeping them on the hook as much as possible. Clearly, budgetarily, thinking about $67,000 a year is easier than thinking about absorbing the full $230,000 immediately. I just don't particularly like paying $20,000 in interest over 5 years, and so I'd like to get to the bottom of that. So let me stop there and say, Paul and Wayne, is there something else you want to discuss?
This is reminiscent of a discussion we had with Secondary Roads with the motor graders. You know, after a period of time determining between the advantages to purchase outright versus leasing over a period of time, the issue as listed here would be, again, as long as we knew that we were moving forward, we were going to equip all vehicles, the $20,000 interest may be minor if we have an installation issue or on one or two cars that they have to be responsible for. However, if we purchase them outright, let me ask Lenny the question, from your understanding, if we have an issue, is it the downtime that we lose in terms of them being able to come in to retrofit or get that car up and running, or...
Sure. Yeah, we'd lose some downtime. Currently, we're losing a lot of troubleshooting time and downtime, and we got to run it to a vendor to fix. But the nice thing with this Panasonic system is, say we have a problem with the equipment, there's just something not working, we have one point of contact, which is Caltech. We will call them. They'll do their best to troubleshoot on the phone if they think they can do that. And if they can narrow it down and say, yeah, that's your front camera malfunctioning on you, they overnight the camera to you, so you will have it the very next day. And with the cameras,
that would be true regardless of whether it was purchased or leased. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Right. Okay.
And that's through the maintenance agreement that we'd have with them.
Yeah. Paul, you're the one of us who spent time in a lot of time in a patrol vehicle. What are your thoughts?
Long time with no camera. I think it's a necessity. And like you had said earlier, Rick, if the camera's down, we need it.
Yeah.
Is somebody going to believe you that we're having technical problems, or they're going to look like, hey, this, you know, the sheriff's office got something that they want to hide, or this particular operator has something they want to hide?
Mm-hmm.
I understand the need. My question is, what happens with the equipment that we've got now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got six cameras that are a year old that
right.
are apparently not working even close to what they thought they were gonna work like.
Right.
I would like to know what our recourse is there, and are we in any kind of a maintenance agreement, contract with Digital Ally that we're going to have to try to get out of, or are we just going to lose any money we've got in that?
Sure.
And as far as the lease goes, I'm interested in the lease, but I'm curious about what happens at the end of the lease. If it's a 5-year lease, what are they going to do for us at the end of 5 years? I mean, when we leased the motor graders, I mean, we knew ahead of time that, you know, that these 10 motor graders that we leased, we're going to get this amount of money for them in 5 years if we want to trade them in and go with another lease. So that's where my interest lies.
Okay.
I mean, is this equipment that they're going to take back in 5 years and we're going to get what's new in 5 years and you know, what are the terms going to be going down the road? Granted, the $20,000 a year interest is a lot of interest, but you know, if we purchase
not $20,000 a year, $20,000
over 5 years,
$30,000 a year. You know, if we've got $250,000 worth of camera equipment that we've laid out that money for,
mm-hmm.
you know, at the end of 5 years or 7 years when their life expectancy is up, it isn't worth anything. Nobody's going to want it. And so we're going to start over again. So
part of the thing that we had discussed about, and I mentioned it earlier when we were talking among ourselves here with the staff, was that technology does change. And that's why it's important that we are, in my opinion, that we're purchasing all of the cameras at a single time. That way, any upgrades, anything, they're all current with one another. Like anything else, they're going to need, there's a life expectancy to them, they're going to need change out. Nick had said earlier that they have proven that they can go 10 years. What I would like to plan for, or like the board to plan for, is that should we enter into this process, either buying the cameras outright or through lease agreement, that what the county would also consider doing is putting X amount of dollars away in a line item with the expectation that within 8 years we'll be doing this again. And instead of worrying where the money would come from, the money's been being built there all along, and then that's just, we know that's going to be an ongoing operational change. And where technology is going to be in 8 years, wow.
Sheriff, that's the beauty of doing the lease. The downside is the $4,000 that you're spending. The beauty of it is then it becomes a line item in our budget every year. That we're just budgeting. I mean, that's what we're doing with the motor graders. In essence, even though there's a residual value on the motor graders, in essence, we're just planning on spending that money every year as we go. We're going to get new motor graders in 5 years. In this case, we plan on getting new body cameras. I think I read somewhere 6 to 7 years, maybe it's 10 years you can get them. But we're going to get new ones as we need them. But it becomes a predictable budgetary item rather than this start and stop process of, okay, let's, you know, $250,000 this year, and then we think it's going to be 6 years, but it might be 8 years, and then we need another $250,000. It's the reason that something like that is attractive to me. But I'm really interested in what are you hearing from Ethan in terms of what our recourse is with a company that's not providing what we expected them to provide?
Yes. So to address those concerns, we are under no contract with Digital Ally. So whatever we do from this point on, there's no penalties. We just straight up purchased the product from them. We have a warranty on this product. But, of course, their warranty covers the repair or replacement. It doesn't they don't put in their refund. There is a process, I understand, to get a refund through Digital Ally, and Ethan has started that process. The first part of that process is to make a request in writing, which we have done with the company. We've also provided a inventory list of the items that we return, which include the six newest units. At this point, that's where we're at with that process. We're waiting to hear back on whether or not they're even going to consider our request for a refund. beyond that with the six items, if they refuse to take them back and refuse to give us any sort of refund, you know, we can get creative. There's other agencies in the state of Iowa and elsewhere that do have this system. Why they'd want to keep buying more of this product, I don't know, because I've talked to many of them and they all have the same issues. But there's, you know, there's a chance that we could sell these items, these newest units, to them if they need some extras or spares, or they want to double down and commit to Digital Ally. Maybe there's an option there. So that's kind of where we're at with that.
Well, and the other side, when you put the pencil through the difference, you figured if you got 5 years out of it, that the price that we're paying, the lease price, we're really figuring we're budgeting somewhere in the neighborhood of less than $6,000 a year. And if we go beyond that 5 year without having to have major purchases, or to have all the cars equipped with the body cameras, with the syncing and capabilities and so forth, would appear to be a cost that we should be, you know, understanding the reality of the climate that we're in today. And not only is it it's a safety feature not only for law enforcement, but it becomes a safety feature for the public as well. And we need to kind of keep in mind that that is a two-pronged, you know, situation. The question that always comes back to me is, in our training and in our initial training, is that something that officers just automatically have to do themselves when they get out of the car or in the car? What triggers, or do you have to physically push a button and turn it on?
That's correct. On a lot of our units, and even these newest units that are supposed to work automatically, we are manually pushing those buttons. And just from an officer safety standpoint, it's a huge concern because there's so much technology in the cars now, and we've added body cameras, which is a great addition for us and the community and everybody. But to have to physically look down to try to turn that unit on, you're taking your eyes off any distraction your eyes should be on, and you're worried more about, you know, covering yourself and getting that camera going than you are about the safety of yourself and the community. So right now we are physically, manually triggering record. And even on these newest units that should be triggering when you turn your lights on the car, they should automatically trigger that camera to record. Even on these newest units, we're having problems with that. The officer would turn on the lights, he's making a traffic stop or something else, his in-car camera is not triggering to record, so that's yet another piece of equipment that he has to manually push. That's what this old equipment. It's a concern from that standpoint too.
Lisa Barkley, are these general fund dollars? Are they rural dollars? Where does this kind of expenditure go?
Typically, this would come out of the general fund.
Any I see our IT directors in the back. Any concerns or comments, Barkley, you'd want to make at this time?
Well, there will be some upgrades that we need to make on our current network. We'll have to purchase more server licenses and a SQL license because there will be a database. We already have the storage for the additional videos. I guess looking back at how far and how fast technology has improved, I think that for us to buy the equipment now, and in 8 years, think we're going to buy it again, I think it will be so outdated by then that we'll wish we would have made a different decision. That's my opinion on it. Any other questions? I think for the wireless to work, we'll have to make an upgrade there, but that was kind of in our future plans anyway, like when they pull in the parking lot. So, and with the current system that we have, it probably won't work, but we are going to do some upgrades. So it seems like it will all come together at the same time.
So what we really need to get, Sheriff, is your voice to be so synced that it becomes just automatically voice-activated, that, you know, they never have to physically go down and push a button or anything like that. Just like Siri, you know, the Sheriff says, camera on, and it's on.
Well, Siri is Star Trek. We're coming on improvements in communications all the time, and they're rapidly developing. So where we end up a year, 5 or 10 years from now, it's anybody's guess.
Question would be, is if we move forward with the purchase as at this time, payment-wise, is it after everything is completely installed? Lisa, do you know? Sheriff, do you know when all of this would have to be finalized?
I can speak a little bit to that, and then if Lisa wants to add in. I haven't spoken in depth with Caltech on it, but I do know there's a 50% down payment required at the time that you order. And then beyond that, I'm only making an assumption, but the remainder of that gets paid when it's completed.
And I also have a note to myself to go look at the lease rules. If we do a lease, what requirements there are to get to that point, because there's public hearing, public notice, all that kind of stuff for a lease obligation. So I'll look into that.
Okay,
so that notwithstanding, because we need to follow the process precisely, and so we'll count on Lisa and Ethan to look into that and make sure we get it done the right way. I'm most interested in the lease option, which looks to me like it's $67,000 a year. Plus, we need to remember, and Barb, I appreciate you bringing this up, that there are going to be some additional costs that we're going to have to absorb in getting ready for the system and upgrading to be ready for the system. So my proposal is this, to see if it gains any traction and maybe gets in motion. My proposal is that we move ahead with option four, making sure we're doing it appropriately, whatever Ethan and Lisa tell us we need to do, which means an additional $67,000 into the sheriff's budget, but I'm proposing that we don't put in $67,000, we'll put in $45,000, meaning that we're putting in two-thirds of the new cost. Sheriff, we would ask you to find the remainder, which would be roughly $22,000 in your budget for this year, and then it just becomes part of our budget discussion for FY17 and beyond. Additionally, then we would be committing to spending whatever dollars are needed to upgrade our infrastructure to be able to accommodate this system, and that those would not be dollars that are currently in the sheriff's budget. That would be new dollars. Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
It's a little bit of a concern to me for this reason. This is the first year that we're doing a little bit different structure in the budget, and where in the previous years I've had 100% of my budget under my control. And this year, the budgeting was taking our salary and benefit line item and then budgeting for 95% of that instead of the full 100%. And then, as I'm expecting this, or this is as I understand it, and then the other portion of my budget is operational that I have control over.
Right.
Now, in all the years, the 23 years that I've been sheriff, we've always been very good stewards of the budget, and we always have given money back, and a large amount. Any money that I spent of significance outside of the budgeted amount, the board was never surprised with what we went to buy. This is where my concern lies at. Approximately 83-84% of my budget, as basically any public safety director's budget is salary and benefits. Mm-hmm. So that leaves me with about 17% of my budget that I have control over. And $22,000, when you look at the entire budget, just over $7 million, nothing. But when you take that $20,000 to something, 17% of that, and the operational portion is where we've always been very close and even under it sometime, and it's been the other portion of the budget that's carried us through. So, Supervisor Sanders, that's where I have a little bit of a pause here when I say I will do that. I don't want to be at the end of this fiscal year and be $22,000 short in my budget and not knowing where I'm going to get that.
Absolutely. And Sheriff, I think we can all agree that you have been a really responsible steward of public dollars. I mean, you spend dollars being the sheriff. No question about that. Some people question some of those dollars. Some people question the dollars we spend. It's part of the deal. I'm one of those that I would stand up and say anytime, anywhere, that you do a great job being sheriff and do exactly what you're supposed to be doing as sheriff. That said, all this money has to come from somewhere. I think we all agree that this is a huge priority. It's a huge priority for us. It's a huge priority for you. And we've got to just figure out how to pay for it. And so what I'm proposing, full recognition, that that it's not always easy to come up with new dollars, especially.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy on any of us to come up with new dollars. It's not easy on the taxpayers of Story County to come up with new dollars. And all I'm trying to do is have full recognition that this has moved to the top of the list in terms of priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to figure out how to rightly pay for it. I take a look at your budget and the phenomenal job that you and your staff do with your budget, and I honestly say $20,000, and yeah, you may have to make a decision near the end of the year of, you know, do we get, I'm going to use something we bought a couple of years ago, a new industrial freezer, right,
mm-hmm.
Somewhere, or not this year. And what I'm suggesting is this ranks ahead of something like that for this year.
Well, barring unforeseen circumstances and public safety, you certainly have that to contend with. I will certainly look to move forward to work with the board on this, but I'm also very cautious since this is the first year doing this and just managing just the operational. We're really, really close, and the things that we have. Last year when we came in, the operational portion, our budget went up 47%, and for was not a whole lot. And to give, we're really working near the bone right now. We don't have a lot of meat that we can just kind of trim off. Now, should we get to the end of the fiscal year, and it is tight, or we're even looking at predicting short, there have been a couple of years, my 23 years, where you know we've laid off people in order to come in under budget. And it's just a concern to me since this process that we're using now is so new, it's kind of a safety net that I don't have
anymore. Well, two couple things. One, we're not going to lay anybody off over $22,000. That's the first thing.
Uh-huh.
Second thing is I hope you would agree with this, that this board over the last 5 years has proven itself that we're here when something unforeseen comes up. We're here, and we're not going to just push it all off on you. And so what I'm saying is if at the end of the year we get to, at least it's usually about April that we try to do our final budget amendment. If we get into April, you're going to have a great feel for your budget. We're going to have a great feel for our budget.
Right.
If we need to have this conversation again at that point, let's have this conversation right here on a Tuesday morning again at that point. But I'd like to move ahead with what I've proposed. If these two gentlemen will go with me on it, and you would be okay with it, I'd like to move ahead with what I propose so that we can get this thing moving. And then, like I say, Sheriff, if we get to April, you're 100% right. We're in a whole new system now with what we did budgetarily with salaries and benefits. We were fully expected. I think the commitment we made to you at that point is we're not going to leave you short based on those salaries and benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're going to cover those regardless of what was budgeted. If we got to have that conversation in April, let's have that conversation in April. But for now, let's move ahead with something that I think is a real priority.
Well, I want you to know that the Board of Supervisors in all my 23 years have always worked for the Sheriff's Office, and I very much appreciated this. And this board is certainly no exception. And with that understanding, I just wanted to have the conversation.
Absolutely.
And now that we've had that, I feel much more comfortable in moving forward. And that is something that I would accept.
Well, there's probably no need for me to comment any further than that. My concern only was to say, again, these are additional dollars that we're not, you know, anticipated. The need is obviously there. The timing is right for us to move forward with it. So by using general fund dollars to that degree, we are just asking you to take a look at, within your total operations, a small portion of that during this initial phase. And hopefully at the end of the fiscal year, you know, you're just not going to be turning back as much as you probably normally would have in a normal situation. But at the same time, through your conversation, know full well that you do have the opportunity to come back to this board if something unforeseen does take place and that becomes a real burden for your operations.
Okay. So we need to put that into a motion.
If you guys want to.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think it's the right thing to do. I'd like to at least option over the flash purchase option. I think it gives us more flexibility at the end of that 5 years to decide what we want to do. I'm glad we've risen the sheriff's comfort level a little bit. So, but we like to keep you just on the edge a little bit.
So, I'm going to make a motion that we proceed with the lease option for the cameras for the sheriff's office. And I can't remember the exact dollar amount. Rick, do you have that?
It's roughly $67,000. And the only thing I would ask as part of your motion is that we're going to refer it to Lisa Markley and Ethan to make sure we do it the right way.
Right.
Follow the process of the lease.
All right. And we'll let Shelley fill in the dollar amounts.
Okay. Second.
We have a motion, second. Further discussion. Two.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. The only thing I'll add to that is I believe that that motion also has a recognition component in it that we got some upgrades to do as part of our infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Over and above anything that might be in here.
Right.
Good. Anything else, Sheriff?
Nope.
Okay, good. Nick,
Great job.
Thank you.
Safe travel.
Thank you.
All right. Consideration of amending the strategic plan. Leanne, I know Deb had another meeting she had to go to. Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning. What is before you this morning is kind of a unique opportunity for the Board of Supervisors to take action on a request to amend your strategic plan. The Board will recall in August of this year, the fiscal year 2016 to 2018 fiscal year, our strategic plan was adopted. I want to note on page 2, there's a statement in the second paragraph, and I'm going to zoom in so I can see it on the screen, and you can see it as well. It says right here, the plan serves as a communication tool between our citizens and their local government. Renewed annually, the plan is edited as needed in response to changing priorities and funding opportunities. While this isn't part of our annual review, we've always made it clear through the procedures as we developed this plan that it was a flexible document and meant to be reviewed as needed. And so that's where we are today. Through conversations with Deb Shildroth, the sheriff brought up a couple issues, and he's here to outline them if I cannot cover them adequately. But if you go to page 11 of the draft of the plan that was on today's agenda, I think it's safe to say a couple of the amendments are clarification or maybe making it a little bit more less specific, more general in language, and that's in items 3 and 4, where rather than saying law enforcement officers to respond to new trends and threats, it simply says public safety agencies.
Mm-hmm.
The same is true for number 4. And I do want to know something I did leave out in the draft. There's an asterisk in item number 3. I failed to add the asterisk to the bottom as a footnote. So there would be an asterisk if this was approved today. That would say public safety in this document refers to law enforcement, fire, and EMS.
Oh.
So just to know, I forgot to reference the asterisk. But then the more detailed one is an addition of a new task, and that is item number 6, and that is replacement of the antiquated radio system. Obviously, it's something that is new that, in addition to this, if it is added to the strategic plan later on this morning when we talk about the draft capital improvements plan, we'll likely want to add that to that discussion as well. But I'll be glad to answer any questions what I can, and again, the sheriff is here as well to answer questions.
Sheriff, how about we start with you?
What I wanted to accomplish here was just to make the Board of Supervisors aware that just as the previous discussion we had, we talked about the ever-changing and rapidly changing technology. Well, we're finding our communications are in an equally, if not a faster, paced boat right now. And we've seen from communications that I've personally been involved with nationally, down to the state level to the local level here, change is coming. And I cannot sit here and say that within a year we're going to be coming to the board asking, or with 5 years, or within 10 years. But the evolution of how we're going to communicate in public safety is changing. In 2012, the president signed into law a bill which gives, as you know, 20 megahertz of spectrum to public safety, and originally $7 billion to start building this out nationwide. And they're hoping, as I understand, by 2020 to start having some of this in play. And that will include a platform which is called P25. P25 platform basically is the infrastructure that everyone will build their communication systems on. And that will be a digital-based platform that will allow interoperability, just like we've had for many years here in Story County. But we've been an island, and our 800 system, we can talk with fire, police, and EMS, but when we have a situation like we had with the shooting a few years ago on the highway, well, we couldn't talk with another county that was standing on one side of the highway and a state patrol that was standing in the median, and we were on the other side, had the latest and greatest in radio equipment, but we just can't talk to each other. So that's kind of the nexus where things are going. I just want the board to be aware that this is going to be a costly endeavor coming up. I don't know how nationally or the state of Iowa is going to be laying this out yet. But I do know the state of Iowa has entered into a $68 million agreement with Motorola to have a statewide public safety plan and network. And I know there's other ones, Harris, that are looking at courting other public safety entities in other counties to try to pull them onto their system. And so we're just coming out of the chutes yet. And I have no definitive information on where we're going. Within Story County, we're meeting with our with Ames, Iowa State, and us have been talking about what is looking more attractive to our public safety answering points or dispatch positions. But so you'll be hearing more about this down the road.
Okay. So just the change that is being proposed here is just a notification that these are topics that need to be thought of and be included as we plan for future expansion, particularly in communication as far as public safety is concerned. Am I correct in that?
Well, I'm bringing this, you know, not only to your to making you aware of this, but also to, I feel strongly about it, whereas it needs to be added to the plan.
Right.
So it's something that will be seen in this living, breathing document as something that is going to be have to be dealt with sooner or later. And yeah. I cannot tell you if it's going to be sooner or later.
And so, Sheriff, could I ask just a couple editorial changes and get your comfort level on them? Instead of replacement of antiquated radio system, which sounds like it's right here on top of us, and I'm hearing that we don't know if it's right here on top of us or not, I'd like to say planning for replacement of antiquated radio system.
How about just replacement of radio system?
Well, again, to me, when you say replacement of radio system and that it's going to be discussed in FY17, it sounds to me like we're replacing the radio system in 17, and what I'm hearing is we're going to have the conversation about where it's going and where it's coming, and that's why I say planning for replacement of radio system, and then
that's what I said too. Just taking out antiquated, just the
and I'm fine with taking out antiquated, but just I'd like it to be more reflective of we're going to have our initial conversations. Well, we're having that now,
right.
But as part of the FY17 budget process.
Right. I agree. Yep.
Leanne, can you make those changes so that it recognizes that we're having the conversation about where this is headed. We're not plugging something necessarily into the budget for FY17.
Okay.
I'm good with that.
Okay.
Leanne, the other thing I wanted to mention while we have you here is I think this document is really, really coming together. I think it's going to be something that we're really going to lean heavily on for the next few years. And there's no question in my mind that it's built on the foundational assumption that everything we do, we want to do with fiscal prudence and solid budgeting practices. I think we all agree that that's kind of the underlying principle of all of this, because clearly we can do all these things if we're willing to spend enough money. The reality is we've got limited amount of dollars to spend. I'm just wondering if in the introduction we ought to have one line, one statement that recognizes the fact that one of our foundational principles is that we're going to do it in a sound budgetary and fiscally prudent manner. I don't know what you guys' thoughts are on that. Like I say, I think it's an assumption that we've made all the way through this document. I tend to think about somebody picking this up who's never been at one of our meetings, never heard what we had to talk about. I'd like that to be one of the first things they see, that that's something that we value and that is the filter through which all the rest of this has to run.
Well, I think that's, at least for the three of us who are here now, is kind of the way that I see that we've tried to run things over the last 5 years. And I think you're right that it was an assumption, but I think it was actually in there.
Well, if you go down to your last paragraph on page two, I mean, it's not your initial statement, but we're talking about strategic planning process to ensure our county's financial stability and ability to continue to provide high-quality service and programs.
Yes, absolutely. I want something stronger than that.
That could be included or added on in that regard. But
yeah, I think if you worked with that a little bit, add that in there.
Okay. Anything else we can talk about on this? And so you need direction?
Okay. I would move that we approve the amendments to the
strategic plan,
specifically under the area of public safety, and then with the addition of the conversation of the initial introduction.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Two.
No.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye.
This is a job well done, Leanne, and also a compliment to all the departments, elected officials, and everybody that has been part of this whole process. This is really going to be just an outstanding roadmap for future direction that the county moves in years to come. So it's very well done.
Well done. Sheriff, thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sheriff.
Thank you.
Next is consideration of planning and development work program. Hi, Gary.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. As you will recall, the board and the planning and zoning commission met November 4 with staff to go over the work program for 2016. 11 of those items are being carried forward for the 2016 program. I don't intend to go through every item with you this morning. I can tell you, though, that the E911 addressing sign issue, there was a concern about the condition of those signs. Darren and his staff did do an inventory and pretty much determined that a lot of those signs are in not the best of condition. So as a first step, we've put together an article for the newsletter to kind of communicate the need for replacing signs that are in poor condition and the process to get that accomplished. So that's the first thing that we've done. In addition to the 11 items, we've got four items, two of those from the board, one to have me become certified to back up Leanne as a floodplain administrator, to work on what our role might be if the Dakin pipeline gets through. And then two items that were added by the Planning and Zoning Commission are to compare the farm retail novelty with the home business regulations to find out if there's any inconsistencies in those two. And then two, to look at all of the development regulations and you know, those items that are prior to 2006 make decisions about whether or not they need to be removed, amended, or whatnot. So that's what we have, 15 items. At this point, I'm asking for a thumbs up, a motion.
On number 13, I just have two. First of all, it's the Bakken pipeline, not the Dakken pipeline. And secondly, I believe that the role of the county in regards to permitting is what we were talking about, right. And I'm not sure that that's reflected in here.
Right.
It is permitting. Absolutely, because I don't think we have I sure don't want any role in anything that they might do if they're approved by the Iowa Utilities Board, but we may have some kind of role in permitting some structure.
I'll clarify that.
Good point.
That's all I have.
Well, I would make a motion to approve the work plan with the
no changes or amended.
Okay.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? Two.
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
It passes. Thanks. No agency reports. Departmental reports. Conveniently. Planning and development. Quarterly report.
Timing is everything. Thank you, Shelley. As we started to look at the quarterly reports, I don't know that planning and development has been here recently. So what we have before you is kind of a look at the last 3 years. Comparing current year with the last two, zoning permit-wise, down a little bit from last year. However, with the decent weather, we may get a few more permits. And this is really through November. And then the key permits that we typically get are single-family development permits, additions to single-family homes, and accessory structures. You can see that that makes up about 62% of the current permits that we received this year. Down a little bit last year, 48%, and then down further in 2013 to 40%. We reviewed 11 agricultural exemptions this year, quite a few more in 2014 and a little less in 2013. I think since I've been here, I've reviewed probably two or three home business permit applications. What's before you is really just the new ones. We send out notices to the home business applicants to let them know that there's a renewal process. So, again, this is just new ones and comparatively compares to last year's one down from 2013. Addressing E911 addresses, this would be for new and replacement. We're up from 2014 and 2013. And then property research, when individuals come in, they want to know if they can divide their property. There's an application, there's a fee, a nominal fee that's requested, and we do a pretty extensive review. We've had 16 of those, which compares closely to last year. Development cases this year had two variances. One dealt with a fence height, which was approved. Accessory building, which got denied. There were two conditional use permits, one involving a tower, another one involving a dog kennel. Subdivision plats, two minor subdivision plats, two residential parcel subdivisions, and a major subdivision plat. The major was that Timber Road Estates. They, through the consent agenda, requested a extension on their improvement agreement to get that accomplished by July of 2016. The department also looked at five different ordinance amendments involving decommissioning agreements, various issues with permitted accessory uses. There was a provision involving a gas canopy setback, ordinance adoption process, and then some amendments to Chapter 87, the land development regulations. Current cases that we're working on, Center Grove Orchard, this came to us through a complaint. They're located southeast of Cambridge. They obtained a conditional use in 2008 for their orchard. They've done some expansion. They brought on a third scale train and train track. There's like 4,000 lineal feet of track. They've expanded their parking. The complaints primarily centered on traffic and noise. The noise we found out came from a dog show that they entered into an agreement with a couple who provided shows through the month of October, which is their busy time. So this was before the zoning, Planning and Zoning Commission on December 2. They asked the staff to obtain additional information, and I did hear back from the applicant, and it, not likely that this is going to go on the January meeting. It's probably going to be the March meeting, because it sounds like the month of February he's out of this area, out of the state. So again, we're working on putting together additional information on that one. The Stephen Lage Minor Subdivision plat, that was also on the agenda December 2. That'll be before the board on the 15th. Alliant Energy, they're proposing a 60-foot high tower on a lease, on a property that they own on 260th Street, which is, I believe, is southwest of Ames. They're not going to be able to meet the setback requirements. They're supposed to be 115% of the height on their setback from the adjacent property property lines. And so there's a caveat in the ordinance that states you meet the 115% or you can request an easement. So they're trying to work through that to obtain an easement from an adjacent landowner.
We're only doing a claims meeting on the 29th, because two of us will be gone.
Correct.
So we're going to need to look at a different date for that.
Right, right. Yeah, so that'll be future. Enforcement items, we've got five items that we're tracking. Part of me being new here, I'm trying to get up to speed with some of these. I've sent out letters asking them to contact us so that we can meet on the site to reassess the situations. One of the more important ones was a notice of violation that we sent out on a property northwest of Zeering. The property owner, for whatever reason, was dumping concrete pieces, construction demolition material. They got till the 10th to comply. They're supposed to provide a compliance schedule or remove all this stuff, so we're going to be watching this one very closely.
Have we heard from them?
Have not heard from them.
Okay.
But they did sign the document. We did certify
them. When they, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to be on this one.
So what happens on December 10th if it hasn't changed? What's the next step?
Well, if we can do another formal notice, civil citation, I guess is what the term is, and then give them an appropriate amount of time to comply with the goal of always...
the goal is compliance.
Yeah, compliance or working out an agreement, dates to have certain amounts of it.
But I know this is highly, it's highly visible, highly important to the people of Zeering. Clearly with Dayton Lake up there, I mean, we got lots and lots going on right on that corner. Not that any one enforcement is more important than another. This one's just really, really visible. I think we need to stay right on top of this.
We will. It's right on the northeast corner there of that intersection.
Mm-hmm. That northeast corner has been interesting. Probably even back in the day when you were living there, was that still a convenience store? What was it?
Initially, it was a Ford dealership.
Okay.
It closed in the late 60s, but there was always something. And they tore the building down here maybe, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago. And then they've gone down. I think they raised hogs in the building for a while.
Okay. So. Last thing that I wanted to talk to you about was Cameron Estates. Just to give you an update, it was a major subdivision plat approved by the Board of Supervisors July 1 of 2014. It was a phased development. This includes phase 1 and 2. It's northwest of the city of Ames. Those two phases contain 27 single-family lots. Darren and I met with the developer's engineer October 26th of this year. And for the most part, the development is in pretty decent shape. They've completed most of the major improvements. There are a few things that we noted that we sent a letter to the engineer on and also provided that to the owners. Those things include some existing accesses, and I've got some site photos that I can show you. But there's some existing accesses on 505th Avenue, which is the western edge of that development. It's the gravel road. They're supposed to remove those. The engineer communicated to staff that there's that he needs to work with Xenia because of the grade, the height that they put in the water line, so they're probably going to have to adjust the height of that if they take out some of these access locations.
Where are these access locations?
They're on the west side. I can show you. I've got a map and then a photo, too. They're actually in the plat. There's two that are supposed to be there. They're shared accesses.
Right.
So there's four total lots that are, you know, two
access total lots that have their egress from 505th.
Right.
But it's only two accesses serving four lots. But you're telling me that we got more lots than that are taking their access.
Well, that there's accesses that need to be removed so that we don't have that situation going on. I can show you in a photo. If they're using one to unload some dirt piles. There's a drainage pipe that the end of the drainage pipe, there's some erosion occurring that we sighted. I can show you a photo of that. There's a sidewalk, or they're calling it a trail on this plat, that extends or is supposed to extend from this development to the development to the east. The property owners are interested and willing to put that in, but there's been some opposition from putting this in from the neighbors to the east. And I noticed when I was out there last week, it looks like one of those neighbors who was in opposition to it has their house up for sale. So maybe that situation will resolve itself, but this is something that was required in the plat. Also, what is required is we're supposed to get a letter from the engineer stating that the improvements have been completed in accordance to the specifications and standards. And then we also asked for a schedule for some of these minor things that we've got listed here to be completed, which also includes the top coat of that road. There's a few inches of asphalt that they have not put down. Probably a quarter of those lots in phase one and two are still owned by the developer. So we have 10 to 15 homes. And then we've been in contact with the developer's bank. They are willing to issue this letter of credit. But again, we're waiting for this letter from the engineer. Here's a copy of it's kind of a conceptual drawing from the engineer. The purple is phase one, the light blue is phase two. Again, most of those, or probably a third of those lots, are still owned by the developer. Phase three is the dark blue on the northern portion. To the east is Hickory Hills, and this is the sidewalk that I was mentioning there that has not been installed. Some site photos. This is the entrance. One of the things that we didn't have was a permit for that development sign. They did submit that permit. This is what we're talking about. The top coat of that road needs to be completed. And again, they want to get a little further along with, you know, the additional construction of the additional houses because of the wear and tear from the trucks. Harvest Road, looking northward. This is the location of where that trail is supposed to be constructed. It'll be to the left of that drainage area. This is just looking at that same location from the development to the east.
And so ultimately it would tie into the road right there in Hickory Hills.
It's supposed to, correct. And so it involved taking down that split rail fence, which is on that common property line. But again, these roads are privately owned but publicly dedicated. But for whatever reason, they're opposing the sidewalk. So I would think the sidewalk would be better than to have people, you know, if you want to communicate, than to go out on Cameron School Road. And again, the owners want to put it in.
Well, we still have some authority on the Cameron side, but we can't really force Hickory Hills to put this in, can we?
It's on the plat.
On Hickory Hills plat.
Well, it's on this Cameron Estates plat to put this sidewalk in.
I get that.
Yeah.
And I get that right up to the fence line.
Yeah.
I just struggle to see how, if the owners of Hickory Hills say, no, we don't want that, I don't know how we
force that?
Well, and I think they're both private roads,
right,
but publicly dedicated. So I guess that's the dilemma.
Okay.
But we won't let that drop. We're going to make sure that we stay on top of it.
Super.
Here's that drainage area. There's some erosion that's taking place that needs to be addressed. Windrose Lane, that's part of phase two. They've done a really good job of fencing and protecting the outlot areas. These have all been seeded with the various seeding that was required in the agreement to keep trucks and traffic off of them. This is one of those accesses. This is close to Cameron School Road on 505th Avenue. And you kind of see they're using it to
drop dirt,
yeah. So,
So help me with this, though. That's them temporarily using it in construction is not a huge deal to us. It's a huge deal when we build something, when a house is built there, if that homeowner thinks that they can use that to get to their house shopping behind the house or something like
correct.
That.
Correct, right, because all the accesses are reviewed. There's provisions in the development regulations, and they're reviewed by the engineering division as far as, you know, distance from, or standards okay. from distance from intersections between access points and that kind of thing. So the engineer is aware of these things.
Was that pre-existing or did they put that in?
I'm sorry?
Was it pre-existing?
It was existing. So it was probably part of the...
Yeah, the original deal access.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I mean, maybe I'm seeing this wrong, Paul, but I don't... It doesn't raise a huge red flag to me that as they're doing some of this construction, that they need a place for the builder, and it's an existing field access, let's go. But at the end of the day, when this build-out is complete,
right,
we've approved these access points and no more.
And I would think it helps keep the trucks off that
asphalt
anyway, and if it's muddy, you know, they'll just make a mess in there. So,
right.
Especially if it was a pre-existing entrance to the field. So.
So that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Build out on phase three, what kind of timeline are we looking at?
You know, we asked that when we did the site review. They still probably have a third of those lots in one and two, so they want to get those taken care of. But I think they're optimistic that things will be moving along. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we see something development plan-wise. You know, summer, fall.
Good.
Hopefully.
I drove through there maybe a month ago, and my old house is gone.
I saw that. I saw that your little house was gone.
I was so sad when I saw my first house.
Okay. I tell you what, and while we're talking about that whole area, because I drove it just the other day, we need to continue to keep conversations about 190th and the bridges on the forefront, because the reality is, once this place gets all the way built out, people are going to get used to running that little back way down by Prairie Moon Refinery and up to George Washington Carver and across that way. And if it is not in our plans to ever replace that long bridge over the Squaw Creek, I think we need to go ahead and start to make that really, really known. We need to get in and do work sooner rather than later on the smaller bridge that we're going to have to replace because of access. But I'm just worried that this thing's going to get so far out in front of us that we're going to end up with a room full of angry people who have new houses in this new subdivision who say, what are you talking about? You're taking away that bridge.
Yeah.
So I think it's something that we need to have the full conversation about.
Is that the one off of 190th south, west of 190th? I mean, as it goes down the hill.
Yeah, the long bridge right there. Yeah. And so the conversations we've had, Wayne, have indicated to me that ultimately 190th is going to be two dead ends. I mean, it already dead ends into 505th Street as you go further up, but it's going to be two dead ends. You're either going to be able to come in from George Washington Carver and down and get access to the subdivisions that are up in there, or you're going to be able to access a couple of those residential properties that are on the west side of Squaw Creek, but you'll have to do it from 505th and in rather than coming across. And I just want to make sure that before we get too much build out in this area, we go ahead and make it known if that's what we intend to do.
And Jerry, I think that rests more with Darren Moon than with you, but I wanted you to hear that conversation. Anytime we talk about it, I'll probably bring it up. Thanks.
Thank
you're doing a great job. You're hearing great things. We're glad you're here.
Thank you.
All right. Next is the County Outreach and Special Projects Quarterly Report. Hi, Gillian.
Hi there. I'm not sure I said good morning earlier, so good morning.
Still, that's right.
Still, yeah. I think you can read the lights off. I think you can see it. Is it on?
Yeah.
Well, it is that time of year. I, unlike Jerry, did not do a year-end review, but I will come back to you and probably in the next month or so with a review in that regard if you want me to. But just going over some items that are in my work program and things I've been working on since October. KoopCog has really started off on my end with a bang. I've received reports from nearly every department. I'm still following up with a couple, but I'm to the point where I'm doing a data compilation from what everyone gave me, and it is challenging, but it will be a great product in the end. CIP presentation was given to the board in October, and then later today, or this morning, I should say, I'll be talking about it again and receiving some direction. A week ago Thursday, we held a county government session of Leadership Nevada. Appreciate everyone that helped out with that from the county sheriff's office. They hosted the morning event, did a tour that did include touring the jail itself, and provided the meal. When we got over here, the auditor, the treasurer, and the recorder came up and met with the group, and then Matt Brook from REG came over and talked about project management again. And so I hope the skill set that the participants received will help build their as they go forth on their projects. Spent substantial, and I have yet to calculate hours on this, but a substantial amount of time responding to the comments on our community rating system application. When I say substantial, I'm talking probably well over 2 weeks worth of work. And this was the third round of review on that regard. We should be hearing something in the next 1 to 2 months. The PPI team, that was a program for public participation or public involvement, excuse me, team, I'm going to invite to meet again yet this month. I know it'll be difficult to schedule something, but have them review and then be ready to go forth once we receive our notification what score we go in at. C2C plan, I've been involved with providing some commentary on the draft plan, but then also wearing my outreach hat, putting together the communication schedule so that we have a targeted approach to outreach to release the plan, and that will start being releasing next week following your meeting. And then we'll have a series of public open houses again in January and on into February. We're actually going to do a virtual open house too, given that we live in Iowa, and even though it's 50 degrees out in December, I think we'll probably have snow in winter at some point. Did have a meeting in the Story County Economic Development Group, and following up with that, I worked with both Drew and Ethan to do some revisions to the bylaws and the guidelines for that program. I've since sent those on to the chair of the Economic Development Group. Story County will be hosting the January meeting here in the public meeting room, and that will be a topic of discussion, I'm sure. Spent some time putting together a video that can be used for new employees that are coming on board, but I also used it for Leadership Nevada last week, to some other degree, putting some department heads in that weren't available to attend Leadership Nevada so that people can put a face to the name. I think that always helps when you're especially new in a new position or learning about a new environment. And then working right now on preparing an annual report for the board to have that ready for you to share with the general public and any other interested individuals. I'll have that done by the end of this week and printed, in fact. Stop me with any questions as I go forth. In October, you approved awards for the Urban Renewal Area Plan and the Amendments to that plan, and then also did quadrant meetings that were set up for Slater, Gilbert, Ziering, and Nevada. We'll do that again, I believe, this spring, but we'll do a daytime one again. I think the nighttime was really well received in most cases. I can't remember. Oh, it was Slater, where our tennis wasn't what I'd hoped it would be. But it still is a great venue. And in fact, that's where we're going to host the next round of public input sessions on the C2C plan. I think that's a great environment to cultivate discussion. I already mentioned work on CIP. Also working on some small business resources toolkits. And along that line, business retention and expansion outreach. Floodplain management. I'm very appreciative of the board's desire to add Jerry and being certified as a floodplain manager, or at least being trained in what our regulations are and how we implement them in Surrey County. So I do have that backup because I think Paul said that anytime I could get hit by the bus. But I appreciate having the God forbid added. But it is, I'm kind of lone soul at this. I do have Darla that helps me issue the paper permits, but it's great to have a second set of eyes on some of these permit applications. Pending inspections, I only have two properties that I need to get out and look at, but both are highly, highly weather dependent. And one, I will not be able to take the Honda Civic out in. In fact, when I worked in planning development, I took the RAV out, and the brush was only 10 feet tall and had to walk through most of it at that point. So I know the work's been done. I'm sure it's been done in accordance with the permitted requirements. It's not going anywhere right now. So as soon as I have a chance, I'll go out and do that.
You can't get a drone to fly over with a camera for you?
I hadn't really thought about that. I'm trying to embrace technology, but that's not a direction in which I'm headed. I'll let my 10-year-old son know that maybe they can ask Santa for one for Christmas. Pending permits I do have, I have 8 that are out there. These are either structural or non-structural that I'm waiting to hear from, whether the work has been done. Then I'll go out and do the final inspection. And then now I'll go to the next category, the final permits to issue. I have 11, and then I have a pre-construction phase. So I have 11 to final out and close out, and then I have one that's a new application to actually start the ball rolling with a preliminary permit. There are 2 potential enforcement cases through floodplain management. Just as Jerry mentioned, I have process to work through with those, and right now I'm at the stage of investigation and then getting information back from property owners. Both will be voluntary compliance, I'm sure of that. 0 pending applications, and I already mentioned the TRS verification. On a monthly basis, I have it scheduled in my Outlook calendar to go to our website and check out the floodplain management, make sure it's timely, and if there's any pending federal legislation or anything to share with the general public, I add that. Right after the beginning of the year, actually, that's not true. Around March or April, I'll be doing a mailing to all floodplain properties, and we budgeted for this, and it'll be a substantial investment, but I think well worth outreach. And then continue to try to find time to do training to county staff and different interest groups. And then the next 3 are items that are in my work program that, as I find time after the beginning of the year, I'll really work on these. And I have a couple of high school teachers that are really interested in that last one, the Know Your Floodplain curriculum. Mm-hmm. And I also have a middle school age teacher very interested in that as well. It'd be tailored a little bit differently, but the bones and the structure would be the same. Upcoming work program items for some discussion too. Technical assistance communities, I'll come back to that. I want to get some guidance from the board in that regard. I already mentioned the PPI team meeting. After the first of the year or two, Matt Boyk, our GIS coordinator, is going to help me kind of venture out into that technology territory and do a story map for our floodplain. That's kind of the next wave of GIS having, so the general public can really use GIS to the great degree for mobile devices, et cetera, to allow people to understand what the floodplain is, what the concerns could or should be. In turn, we did get 5 applications, narrowed it down to 3 with the timing. We're going to wait till next semester to get the interviews up and going. I think I'm going to do the interviews over the probably Christmas break if they're around, or winter break, and then start them right after the beginning of the year. Historic Trust Preservation Fund, I need to find a time to come back to the Board of Supervisors to discuss my findings and get some direction from the board. I might do that December 22nd, depending on what the board's agenda is going to be, or I'll wait until the first of the year. Again, communications plan, looking for some guidance from you all or some feedback on what you'd like to see included in next year's communications plan. I'll bring that to you. Last year I did it about this time of year. No, I did it in early January. I'll probably be doing something similar so we would enact it shortly after the beginning of the calendar year. And then you've asked me to work on the state of the county address, and I will get busy on that. That's it. Do you have any questions?
Were you going back to the tax
Oh, yeah, I'm going. Thank you.
Yep.
This was something the Technical Assistance to Communities Program passed, 3 years now? The board has done that. You've generally done it like February through the end of the fiscal year. I've had, I know Drew's had a couple inquiries, I believe, or has at least asked me about it. I know I've had one person ask me about it. I just want to get some feeling. Is this something the board wants to do again this year, or do we just say we've done it 3 years, let's use those resources? And as I say that, what will be coming before you sometime in January with the budget discussions is increased funding requests on the part of Story County Economic Development Group to do more community development planning rather than just economic development planning. So it could be, that could be a better use of that funding to go in that regard. But I want to, you know me, I'd like to plan ahead and schedule things out. So if it's something you think you might want to do, I have the one entity I've heard from, they were asking in passing, not a specific project. But, I mean.
Yeah, my gut feel is we've done it 3 years in a row. It's a good year to take a year off from this. Drew, I'd be really interested to get your perspective as you're out visiting with some of the communities. Do you think that's a reasonable place to be, or do you think this is something that we have some communities that are really relying on?
I know two of the communities I'm working with some projects on this would be applicable to, and it's Cambridge and their community center and Collins with their fire station. You know, I told them it's kind of tentative. We don't know if we're going to renew it. And I think they obviously seem disappointed because they would like to see some of those funds to use in some of the architectural and engineering and planning documents that they're going to need for those facilities.
Good. Thank you.
And so that would basically be a slight change from the type of assistance that we've given. So will we be looking to amend just if we wanted to just focus on those requests?
Could possibly. I know Cambridge, either last year or the year before,
right,
received funding for design their business park.
Right.
Their business park was identified under CIP. So it was a logical extension of the programming that we've set up and how the resolution was drafted. We don't specifically call out architectural and engineering studies, but you know, if you're putting in a water line, an engineering study is going to be and that's identified to CIP, that's going to be a rational nexus you can make.
Well, I think the main thing to keep in mind is that all of these are future planning opportunities and outreach to communities, and if they can really demonstrate a definite need and it fits within the scope of what we're trying to do, we can always evaluate whether or not it's a direction we want to take or not. If there are no other funding sources available to them, and I think the idea behind it is if you could reach out countywide and to certainly communities that have not had opportunities to utilize the assistance that we put up, and yet it seems to be a worthwhile project, at least it allows us to have that discussion. It doesn't necessarily mean we'd approve it, but it allows us to give consideration to it, and maybe it's something that they could go back and say, well, even if there was some partial funding, but not all of it. And so I guess I'd like to ask us to consider to keep open the possibilities that we may be having some needs and questions coming to us that were unforeseen, when we started.
Wayne, I think you're 100% right. I think we always have that ability. If there's something that's unforeseen, that's necessary over and above a program or funding option that we have, we can always take a look at that. My feeling with this technical assistance, when we started that 3 years ago, or four, I guess 4 years ago, when we started that, it was in order to give our communities an opportunity to help themselves and bring some of their documents up to speed and get going. And I think we've offered that to them, and many of them took advantage of it over 3 years. We should be in a good spot there. Now we know that the Economic Development Group, who I hope is going to undergo some structural changes, but has gotten really active, is going to come to us and request some additional funding, part of which could be used for components like this to help communities, not a specific community. And so if we're going to do that, we need to identify some funding for there. In addition, we're looking at this Historic Preservation Fund. I'm seeing those dollars that in past years we have allocated toward this technical assistance, and I say it's not a major need this year. Those that we're interested in and we're going to take advantage really have.
Right.
And the second one is we got other places, other related air avenues to possibly spend some of these dollars to the benefit of our local communities. And so that's where I'm suggesting we go. I'm not suggesting, Wayne, that we take away our opportunity to look at anything if we have somebody that wants to bring it before us.
Yeah, and that's all I wanted, just to have make sure that we were have that built in, whether we call it technical assistance or call it something else. You know, it's there.
I just wanted to add, too, that while it served a very valuable purpose and a lot of people are getting a lot of good use out of it and they'd like to see it continued, I will add, too, that the USDA, through their loan and grant program and their grant programs, you can use some of those funds for planning. And there's also, if you can partner with the utility provider, with the Iowa Area Development Group through the ripple effect process, you can actually do an application for grant funds for planning assistance as well. So there's other outlets to consider as well that I'm making them all aware of as well.
And that's a great point, Drew, and I'm so appreciative of that. We were never intended to be utilized as a substitute for other available funds.
Correct.
We were only intended that you don't have anywhere else to go and your budget doesn't accommodate this.
Drew, contact FERPA, Andrew. We had a proposal that was brought before our planning team that really gets into this idea of planning for small communities. And it was defeated the first time it was proposed. It's going to be brought back up to us. Story County, Boone, Darren and I, and were in support of it. I met along with Dean Yorty, that's on the CERPA committee, and we believe that this allows the region, CERPA region, to be able to pool some federal dollars for planning purposes. And I mentioned to Andrew that he might want to reach out and have a conversation with you guys in terms of what we're doing and what maybe some future plans, because I think when this is brought back before the committee, if we can show some areas where there are needs in small communities for this type of assistance, and so they become also a part of a resource that could be used, their staff in assisting as well. So I would just ask you to reach out to him and get more information from what they're trying to do.
Good. Do you get enough from us?
Well, the only comment I'm going to make is our question or point. I operate on a fiscal year basis with my work program. But as you all know, it's pretty flexible. It's, again, those other duties as assigned. If there's something that you need, you think it needs to be added to it, please let me know so I can get that added and help schedule. As I said earlier, I'd really like to be able to schedule myself out and know when I need to have take what needs to take top priority at what time. Anything else for me?
Nope. Thank you.
Not right now.
Duties as assigned. All right, next item is in other reports, a discussion and direction regarding the draft capital improvement plan.
Well, in October, I came to you all, and you set me forth to publish this online, the draft capital improvements plan, publish online and provide opportunity for public comment. In that means, as well as other means, I've placed on social media. I have taken it to every quadrant meeting we've had. I've been to several organizational group meetings over the past couple months, wearing my APA ambassador's hat. I've taken it that regard. I'm disappointed to sit here before you and say we've not received any public comment directly to me.
Well, that must mean we're doing a great job.
Yeah, I guess I'm not disappointed. Every opportunity has been given. Couple points to make. Today, your action is not to approve it. That will occur in May, around the same time as you're approving the budget. But the importance of this is the first meeting of your budget work sessions will be to look at these CIP projects and build those as appropriate into the budget for this fiscal year, which we're planning. I think it would be appropriate to add the purchase or lease, however it's accomplished, of the Panasonic arbiter system. We did that with the big motor graders, and knowing the total purchase was well over almost $250,000 when you add in the wireless improvements that may need to be completed, that would be added. And then possibly adding the planning for the replacement of the radio system as well, that the sheriff just discussed with you, and amending the strategic plan. So those are the two additions that have come up since we originally published this that I think would be worthwhile to add. I could take these back to the committee, the team members, probably do it via email and me if we need to, get some recommendations and have those ready to present at your first work session. Was there anything else?
I think it's completely appropriate for that. Those two items to go back to the team and get their comments. And I think it is, I mean, we always said that this is a living document and things are going to come up. But I think it is important that we include those items in our capital improvement plan.
Did you all receive any public comment or have anything else you wanted to add?
No.
Today is just to basically tell me, yes, bring forth all this, add these additional items. Here's a public comment we received, and we'll bring it back.
I've not heard anything from anybody else.
Just people have been very pleased. And
yep. Very good. Adam, bring it back.
Okay.
They call me Adam.
All right.
That it?
That's it.
Public forum number two, opportunities for members of public to comment on items not on today's agenda. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Paul?
Pass.
Wayne?
Pass.
Announcements from the supervisor, Paul?
Pass.
And Wayne?
Just a quick reminder that this coming Friday, the Conservation Board and Department is having a legislative session at 9, starting at 9 o'clock with refreshments at 9:30 program. And we've invited our local legislators. This is the second year for this. They'll be, you know, sharing a lot of the things that's happening in conservation and also trying to garner support for the IWIL program and continue conservation funding. And there'll be some discussion probably talking about clean water initiatives and things like that that is certainly that's got everybody's attention here in the state of Iowa as we move forward.
It was well done last year. I expect it to be well done again this year. Nothing for me. Motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Adjourn.